Good evening, sir.
This is episode 85 of the Beef and Bitcoin podcast with your host, Brett CH. Today's topics, looks like your friends over at JP Morgan have let us know that they're going to have new lending standards for mortgages. Who could have thought that you would need new lending standards after everybody starts defaulting on their mortgage? So we'll talk about that and how it kind of relates to Bitcoin. One of the other topics was Chamath absolutely destroying the CNBC anchor about whether or not letting airlines fail is a good or a bad thing. Probably one of my favorite clips I've ever seen, the best 2 minutes of CNBC audio of all time. We're going to play that for you and go over a little bit about why he is absolutely correct. And the last thing is a bull market around the corner? I know that's a little clickbaity of a topic to talk about, but I saw a tweet about, you know, this bullish Ethereum news that you would think would be bullish. And the engagement was just dead, like nobody cared. And I had just posted a meme today about how engagement was pretty much dead. So I thought it was a good kind of topic to talk about. And do we feel like the bull market is around the corner or not? I think that's a fun topic to kind of kick around. But how you doing, man? It's been a crazy week.
Yeah, it's been already so far. Things are still floating along, you know. Things haven't completely collapsed yet. There's hope on the horizon, I think. So we're in a pretty good place, I feel like. I think you and I are both less worried than we were a few months ago. And normies are really worried. So we'll see how this plays out. Opposite side of the herd or the trade, whatever you want to say now.
Yeah. No, I think we're I definitely think we're turning the corner. And it's no surprise that we're feeling early about this.
People are going to be worried again for a few weeks. And then all of a sudden, when the media tells them it's okay, people will be good.
Right, exactly.
Just give it like another month. Just wait till you have to like wait for Brett Baer on on Fox to say, you know, all the middle-aged people will be happy.
Too funny. Let's jump into this this article on JP Morgan raising their lending standards. I thought this was such a fascinating thing to see drop from in terms of economic news today. And JP Morgan Chase has decided to raise their borrowing standards for most new home loans. New mortgages are going to need credit scores of at least 700 and a down payment of at least 20% of a home's value. Now, I understand that not all banks are going to follow this, but it is interesting that JP Morgan, of all banks, is deciding to be a little bit more stringent on who they decide to give a loan to. They said, due to the economic uncertainty, we are making temporary changes that allow us to more closely focus on serving our existing customers. Refinancing requests jumped to their highest level in more than a decade. Yeah, so when they say they need more time to service their existing company customers, they're saying a shitload of people have called and let us know that they will not be making their mortgage payments on April 1st, May 1st, June 1st, or until they get back to work. Pretty scary. Borrower requests were also delayed. This rose by 1,900% in the second half of March, according to Reuters. So a lot of people are calling in saying, yeah, we're not going to make our mortgage payment. Other news had stated that as much as 30% of homeowners, so approximately 15 million households, could stop paying their mortgages if the U.S. economy remains closed through the summer and beyond. And then the last piece here is that home prices have historically meandered in the range of 3 to 4 times median incomes, and that jumped to 5.1 times in December 2005 before collapsing. So today, that ratio is at around 4.4 times. So we haven't seen those kinds of levels since 2004. So when you think about this, I have a feeling now that people aren't paying their mortgages, people are going to start defaulting on their credit cards, auto loans, all this stuff. Are you at all surprised to see a bank come out and say, maybe we need a little bit more strict lending standards before we start giving out loans again?
Not at all. It seems like everyone wants to just not pay anything, rent, you know, any kind of loan, any interest, they just don't want to pay it. It's insane. And I get it. This is a shitty time for a lot of people. Like, what, 17 million Americans in the last 3 weeks lost jobs? That's horrific. That's the largest ever. The graph is it's jaw-dropping. The graph is ridiculous for it. It's never been that many people, not even during 2007, 2008, and 2009. Never seen. And so it just tells you how bad this was and how quickly it was. And we'll see if this was an overreaction very shortly here. I think we might have at this point. It's pretty clear if the numbers are not going up as fast as they're supposed to. But getting back to the point, the lending standards, yeah, because at this point, it seems like everyone's in the I'm not going to pay train, and there's a lot of people doing it, so why not?
You know, Peter Schiff had a really good take on this, surprisingly. No, Peter's a good guy, but we have to keep giving him shit. you know, he said these lending standards could be catastrophic to the real estate market because nobody has 20% to put down. One of my friends actually, who lives back in Philly, he's a real estate investor, you know, a real estate agent, has helped a lot of our friends from high school actually get homes just in the past few months. And he was talking with my buddy about it, and he was like, yeah, I mean, if people need 20% down, he's like, the real estate market's toast. No, who's going to be able to buy? And Peter's take was, well, if you need 20% to put down, then home prices need to fall until the point where people actually have 20% to put down. Now, whether they could fall that much is, I guess, a different story. But does that make sense to you when you think about that? If you need to put 20% down now, the only way to do that, or else homes don't sell, is if the price of housing comes down.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say the average American home is $400,000. You know, that 20% down is going to be quite – I was thinking 25% down for $75,000. But, I mean, so – but for 20% down, it would be $65,000, $60,000 down, something like that.
For like 300K down?
Or like 400K down, I was thinking. But if 300K, yeah. I mean, you're talking 60, 70K. I don't think a lot of Americans have that now because of – you think about our time, there's a lack of interest in savings. You know, like you get paid nothing for putting your cash in the bank. You either have it in stocks or you have it in, you know, real estate, or you have it in other stuff, or you spend it because you're better off spending it than letting it sit there and go to waste. So it's just like one of those situations where $70,000 down, I don't think most Americans can do that right now.
Yeah, and
unless you liquidate something,
right? And they don't want you to liquidate, so it's it's interesting because, you know, if you think about it, used to be what, 3% minimum, right? So 3% of 300K. What do you mean? Call it 3% per 100,000. So call it nine or 10 grand that you'd need to put down, right? That's
nothing.
You know, that's a motivated buyer could come up with that. I mean, even me, I think I put 5 or 6% down when I had bought my house in 2013, and it was still like a coming up with a 20 some K to put down. It's like, whoa, that's a lot of money. It's not an insignificant amount. So if you all of a sudden, you know, triple that, quadruple the amount that you need to put down, all of a sudden you've just lopped off a huge percentage of the people who could buy a home at 3, 4, 5%. There's absolutely no way that they're going to be able to buy a home at 20%. And I guess the question is, will other banks start trending towards that direction of starting to become more stringent with their lending standards? I don't know, but it's just, I find the whole thing so interesting when you think about real estate has traditionally been used as a store of value, right? We call it, for the last four decades, it's been a store of value. That's how the great American dream, and you boomers buy their homes, and all of a sudden their home prices pump, and then they're going to dump their housing bags onto a millennial when they choose to retire in Arizona into a two bedroom, two bath condo. That's pretty cheap for them, right? That's the game plan. And people have been using real estate as a store of value for a long time, which makes sense, right? You get the land with it as well. It's fairly finite, right? I guess you can keep building up, but if you have a little plot of land, that's pretty good. They're not going to make too much more of it, I guess. But when actual underwriting standards come back into play, and you're only going to lend money to, who are you going to lend money to, people now? You're going to lend money to a person who, in the worst case scenario, they can work remotely full time. They make at least 100K and they have decent savings and a good credit score. That's a very small portion of people. And there's going to be so many houses that are going to flood the market. What, in by the end of the summer? If assuming, let's assume everything goes back to normal overnight, nobody could list their home in the last, what, 30 days? And then you're going to have all the supply hit the market at the end of the summer. Like, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a, like a case study to watch how the real estate market reacts.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible to watch this pan out over the next few months. If things reopen, it's going to be interesting to see the shock to the psych side of this thing for people. Like, if things were able to go back to normal the first week of May, I think it's going to be hard for most people to kind of just, you know, normalize what just happened to them.
Do you think if, let's say, there's a 30% haircut on real estate prices, it kind of gets back to reality, do you think that store of value narrative that real estate has starts to go away? And I ask this because it seems like gold made a little bit of a move today. That store of value narrative of gold is starting to make more sense. And if you're thinking to yourself, okay, I'm going to store my money in real estate because I don't have a good store of value, right? My money's trash. You can either go to gold, or maybe if you're feeling ballsy enough, you consider Bitcoin a store of value. Now, if there's another haircut like in 2008 when real estate prices could only go up, does that narrative get shaken since it happened a second time? There was a second real estate crash?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know how to answer that, but I do know how to answer this more in a sense that, you know, gold is on the way in the US dollar to getting, you know, ridiculous. If we break out in the US dollar, that's going to be, for every other fiat currency that is already in price discovery with gold, it's going to be even worse. Because once the US dollar starts losing against gold again, every other fiat currency, which, you know, the US dollar is a world reserve currency, it's just going to make that, exacerbate that issue for every other currency. And so again, this is where the whole, you know, currencies in free fall, you know, your fiat currencies are, they're all in free fall right now as we speak, and continuously in free fall, and getting even more so with, you know, zero rates, negative rates, and unlimited printing at this point. But the real estate side, yeah, I mean, if you think about, as you always talk about commercial real estate, and then you think about on top of that, like, if in big cities, people don't want to be in New York City, how much do real estate prices fall? You know, $1 million home, what does that fall to, have to fall to $200,000 because it's so small that no one wants to buy it? You know what I mean? Like, well, some areas could get just destroyed, you think about it.
Yeah, and you know, the seasonal type of places could have their housing prices destroyed. And the reason that I'm bringing this topic up, and I'm thinking about gold, I'm thinking about real estate, I'm thinking about Bitcoin, as the store of value narrative gets on shaky ground for something like real estate, there, real estate globally is a $200 trillion market. $200 trillion. It's huge. So if all of a sudden you're seeing a flock to actual stores of value, let's just use gold here in this example, why would you deal with the maintenance costs of a condo in New York City with $1,000 a month HOA and all, and the property taxes and everything else that comes along with that, if you can't look to something like a gold, something like a Bitcoin? The cost to hold it is so much greater in real estate. And I don't wonder if one more shock or crash to that will, you know, fundamentally change the way people think about real estate as a store of value. Because you've had 10 years of HGTV telling every single millennial, Gen Xer, or boomer that they can become a real estate investor with these three simple tricks. You know what I mean? It's like,
you can do it.
You know what I mean? I feel that narrative just heading the total opposite direction if the Fed can't figure out how to prop up real estate, like reinflate the bubble again one more time. I mean, I guess it hasn't crashed yet, but it takes, the commercial side took a little bit of a hit, but from a residential side, it takes, you know, the bottom in real estate wasn't until like 2011. So it can take years. That's what I mean. It's not as liquid as, say, Bitcoin or gold, where the price can just shoot up because you can trade it instantly. There's like, it's there's nothing.
You need to find a buyer. Yeah. Yeah, you need to find a buyer. Multi-million dollar home. Not everyone's going to be buying that. You know, not everyone's.
Right.
Right. I just, you know, that's where I wonder. There's 200 trillion sitting in real estate. If even very, very, very small portions of that flock to, for lack of a better term, safe haven assets, or let's say things that are scarce or limited in supply. I mean, it's just it's so much value that's being stored somewhere else where it might not be best stored there anymore. And what does that mean for store value assets? I think it just could get really out of control.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm not an expert in real estate, but if this does get worse in the sense that, like, in the summer we see everything just collapse, which I hope not, but you know, people obviously getting laid off, and just the downstream effect of 17 million people losing their jobs and then them not spending money. So, you know, businesses not bringing in much, you know, income, and then that all just is one giant cycle and eventually makes its way around the economy. That, I don't know how great of an effect. And then you think about the global side of it, the supply chain. If it really is as bad as, you know, we're seeing it reported, then, you know, 5-6 months from now, it could be a completely different picture of where we're at. But in the meantime, stock prices can go anywhere. So,
right.
I mean, market's going to remain irrational, you know.
Right.
Longer than you can remain solvent. That's all you have to know. Like Amazon right now is very close to breaking out. And if it breaks out, 3,000 Amazon is not off the table.
Yeah, that absolutely would blow my mind.
And, it's there. It's like all these charts, it's there. It's somehow there. Like even Apple and Microsoft, like there's just the retardness of what could happen if yeah. we get the, like, cause we've seen it with crypto. Like this is just a slow motion replay. And is it now, like after looking at that Robinhood thing earlier, you think about it, you're like, oh shit, is it happening? Are we, you know, are all the bags loaded with all the retail money? And we're going to get that last pump that's going to give, you know, the people who want to sell a chance to sell into strength, basically, as, you know, the retail FOMO just over. Because you and I both talked about it. The retail FOMO, we've never seen it before like this. Like, I feel like everyone wants to be in equities all of a sudden. It's like, what the fuck?
No, yeah, it is interesting and a good it's a good transition into the next two topics. Basically, we can remind me to talk about the retail FOMO when we get to the last topic. But let's jump into this video clip with Chamath
and play the whole thing.
Let's play this whole thing. And you know, as I said,
I'll let you talk about it first. My bad, I didn't mean those things.
Yeah, yeah. He, you know, Chamath from Social Capital went on there with Scott Wapner, absolutely destroyed him, and gave him a quick economics lesson on. How bankruptcy works, how recessions work, and how, you know, businesses failing is not a bad thing whatsoever. Gets rid of all the malinvestment, all the employees and their pensions remain, new owners come in, buy up all the assets on the cheap, learn their lessons from the bad mismanagement, and they move forward. And it isn't a big deal. And it's almost, it's weird to see Scott say these very interesting things about morality when it's coming to business. It's just like, it was a real eye opener. And I give Chamath so much credit for absolutely roasting him on national television. Why don't you go ahead and play this clip, and then I'm curious on your take afterwards.
But are you suggesting, you keep saying propping up zombie companies. Are you arguing to let airlines, for example, fail?
Yes.
Why? I mean, how does that make sense in the broader scheme of the economy?
Because it's not, because when you look at what it means, this is why I'm saying, like, this is a lie that's been purported by Wall Street. When a company fails, it does not fire their employees. It goes through a packaged bankruptcy, right? If anything, what happens is the people who have the pensions inside those companies, the employees of these companies, end up owning more of the company. The people that get wiped out are the speculators that own the unsecured tranches of debt, or the folks that own the equity. And by the way, those are the rules of the game. That's right, because these are the people that purport to be the most sophisticated investors in the world. They deserve to get wiped out. But the employees don't get wiped out. The pensions don't typically get wiped out.
Why does anybody, I just understand, why does anybody deserve, using your word, to get wiped out from a crisis created like this? How does anybody deserve to get wiped out?
Well, but just be clear, like, who are we talking about? We're talking about a hedge fund that serves a bunch of billionaire family offices. Who cares? Let them get wiped out. Who cares? They don't get the summer in the Hamptons. Who cares?
I mean, there are people. You don't think the employees.
Hold on, Scott.
You don't think the employees of these companies own stocks? I mean, own their stocks, own the company's stocks?
You can look on Bloomberg and you can see what percentage of these companies are typically owned by. These things are owned by BlackRock. These things are owned by these huge, you know, amorphous organizations. Ultimately, downstream, and the employee owns a few hundred dollars or a few thousand dollars of shares.
Well, I just don't understand. So this is like a natural disaster. And why does anybody deserve to get wiped out? Wouldn't that be immoral in and of itself?
No, because what's happening right now is what I'll tell you is on Main Street today, people are getting wiped out. And right now, rich CEOs are not. Boards that had horrible governance are not. Hedge funds are not. People are. 6 million people just this week alone basically saying, holy mackerel, I don't know how I'm going to make my own expenses for the next few weeks, days, months. So it's happening today to individual Americans. And what we've done is disproportionately prop up and protect, you know, poor performing CEOs, companies and boards. And you have to wash these people out.
Yeah, he just crushed it. I mean, he absolutely crushes him at the end. Like, and he just lays it down how it is. Like, you know, poor governance from the top down. Like, those are the people that deserve to get wiped out. Like, the employees don't lose their job. They don't lose, you know, their pensions, et cetera, as he's saying. It's just the management and the higher-ups, the boards, get wiped out. That just has to happen. New ownership comes in. They might buy it for a lot cheaper, but that has to happen. Like, that's just part of capitalism. That's part of the cycle. And we've exacerbated this cycle. So it's time for, you know, this as we see, I think it might be Ben Hunt, Epsilon Theory, talks about it, but I've seen a lot of people, the managerial class, were just a bunch of executives who didn't found the company, didn't start anything, just were put into positions and get paid, what, tens of millions of dollars just to keep the stock price up, basically?
Pretty much.
No new innovation, no new nothing, no reinvestment, you know, it's no nothing, no employee training. I mean, the CapEx, none, just buybacks and maybe dividends if it's a dividend stock. It's like, that's the reality.
It's I can't believe he did that in 2 minutes and 37 seconds. He just did such a good job explaining exactly how things work and why it's not such a big deal. But I find it more interesting that, you know, the anchor is so pushy about how you can't let it happen, or, you know, whatever. It's just, I mean, your job is to report the news, not, you know, have an opinion on this whatsoever. I found the whole thing very weird that he would even go there. But do you think Chamath got a lot of shit after this for saying that, because it went so viral? I mean, 10 million views.
Oh shit.
I mean,
I just looked at that. 10 million views.
Everybody retweeted it. They turned it into memes where, like, he says, yes, I believe they should fail. And then they put, you know, Scott in the coffin with, like, people dancing around it. I mean,
yes.
It's over. It went viral. I just wonder, you know, did somebody pick up the phone and tell Tremont, you can't talk good about capitalism like that. You know, whatever.
I mean, he is the CEO of Social Capital. I don't think he cares. I don't know his net worth. I don't know him that well.
He's a billionaire.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. To answer your question, no. Affirmative, no, he does not give a fuck. If he's worth $1 billion, he does not give a fuck. I can guarantee that. I just have to, that's just as frank as I can be.
Yeah. I mean, I like Chamath because because he's, you know, a billionaire. He absolutely crushes it. Number two is that he has very heavy Bitcoin bags. And just the last week, he was, you know, he was basically trying to make the point either Bitcoin's going to zero or going to $1 million is, you know, that was
it. Pretty.
And so he 100% gets it. I think he has a good view on the global macro landscape. I think this last video just kind of bumped him up a ton of notches in a lot of people's belt for having, you know, the guts to tell the truth and tell it like it is. That was awesome to see. But you know, does him going up there, does that even matter, right? Will everybody just get bailed out anyway? I mean, it's nice that he's giving his take on CNBC saying, yeah, let him fail. Everything will be fine. Don't worry. The planes aren't going to disappear. But at the end of the day, does it matter? Or is everybody going to get bailed out anyway at the expense of the taxpayer and the holders of the currency?
That's a good question. I mean, is it kind of happening? I mean, we just printed an ungodly amount of money. So, yeah, it kind of just happened. Though I think if this goes on and we see small business across America fail and like Amazon succeed, I think that the social unrest side of this, I think, is what people don't worry about. And that's something that still worries me down the line. Even if we do get back to normal, can we avoid social unrest? Because I don't think people do. 17 million people are out of jobs. It's a pretty big number, you know.
Right.
And that's a lot of affected people.
No, it's a lot of people. It is terrible, scary. And I guess Occupy Wall Street got kind of big. And it would be interesting if you saw something like that happen again, especially, I mean, you can just imagine this clip of Chamath just on repeat. If there's ever a round two of Occupy Wall Street, you'd be like, really? You guys bailed out all these companies that bought back all their shares, didn't keep enough cash on hand to cover, a black swanish type of event. And we're going to debase the currency in order to cover it. You know what I mean? That's like the perfect way to kind of bring about Occupy Wall Street too. And I don't know if you consider that social unrest enough, but the one thing's for certain that there needs to be enough discontent from the citizenry to push back, to find something unpopular enough that all of a sudden, you know, your public servants are like, all right, I guess everybody's pissed. Like, we can't do that again. Or what are we going to do instead? Because if you say with all the stimulus that happened, you divide it by every person, every citizen, each person's supposed to get, it's what, like $60,000 a person or family in stimulus. And the average person's going to get what, $1,200 or a couple thousand bucks. So where's the rest of the stimulus going? Where's the rest of the QE going? It's going to corporations.
Yeah, someone
going
like to break down the number of like 2.3 trillion divided by the people that lost their jobs.
Yeah. Tom Massey actually did it too. And he's like, this is why I didn't want to I wanted to have the vote in person, because the citizens don't realize they're getting fleeced for, they're getting a $1,200 bribe to print the money and buy everything back. You know,
here's $1,200. Like, shut the fuck up. And it's coming out of your next year's money anyways. It's a joke. It's a complete joke. People are getting played. You're getting $1,200 in advance. That's literally what's happening. $1,200fucking dollars too. I get it. To some people, it's a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of where we are nowadays with the power of our currency, $1,200 is not that much. It really isn't.
Yeah. It's not going to last all that long.
It doesn't last that long.
It doesn't last. Yeah.
I had a conversation with someone recently. They thought like $40,000 or $50,000 would last in a long time. And they went to a pretty big city in California and they realized, I'm like, yep, it doesn't last long, buddy. It goes real quick. It's like, that's when you realize you either have to have a lot of income producing assets or just have a fuck ton of money. One of the two.
Right.
Or you have to have a job. Sorry. I had to go to that point too. But So.
Let's transition to the topic we were talking about right before this. There was an interesting tweet that you and I had kind of talked about before we jumped on here with, the retail FOMO kind of jumping back in. And the Robin Hood charts of the number of people holding like Delta shares and all these other stock shit coins, basically retail is going in and buying the dip extremely hard. And it kind of got me thinking, is that next bull market around the corner in terms of the fact that crypto, Bitcoin, the whole engagement seems really dead right now. The XRP army, right? All those trolls, they've died down. But I have noticed that there does seem to be a group of new hodlers. I posted a meme today about engagement being dead, and I had a bunch of people jump in from like who've been there from 2017. They were like class of 2017. They're still around. And then you have like this other group of new people, like of new hodlers who were born in the last 3 years. And the fact that you're seeing them kind of show up, it's, I don't know. I just wonder if retail is kind of FOMOing right now, if we're about to print trillions more dollars and liquidity is going to go through the roof again. What does that mean? You know, it almost feels like I want to know I don't know. Does it seem frothy, like it's coming back around the corner? Is this the calm before the storm?
You know, man, it's a good question. I mean, if it does happen, it's going to be ridiculous. I mean, I know that much. If it does happen again, because you think about the on-ramps this time that will be ready versus 2017 for crypto, if it did happen, you know, just the ease of doing it. And then people just knowing about Bitcoin more. I mean, everyone's heard the term Bitcoin now. There's no way around that. So if it did happen again, it would get pretty wacky, as one would say.
You're right about. I mean, that's true. The on-ramps are so much different. We have Cash App this time around. There's Swan, Bitcoin. There's so many on-ramps that we didn't have in 2017 that you'd hope could at least handle the volume of new people jumping into the space. And I almost, it seems like if gold and Bitcoin start to pump because they're starting to be looked at as safe haven type assets, and you have, I'm literally watching new retail people start to FOMO into stonks, and you don't wonder, okay, well, what's the leftover amount who are going to look at a new asset class and say, meh, I'm going to put some money there, especially if it's going up, right? If you break 20K or gold breaks 2000, forget about it. Everybody's going to start
It. Everyone buying gold at 2000, dude.
That's my point. So that's where I'm almost like, I don't wonder if the bull market's around the corner for that. I hate saying safe haven type of asset, but that scarce, like a gold, like a Bitcoin, or even in some cases like a stock, right? You have, you're literally seeing it with these Robinhood ownership charts that new owners are coming in to buy the stonk dip, whether it's, you know, going to turn out to be like the Great Depression or not. It feels like it's almost just around the corner, and I can just see people piling in heavily into scarce assets.
Look at the 6 months chart here, dude. Come on. Give it to them, dude. Look at that.
That's what I mean. It could be full send.
And dude, this is a linear chart. So look how ridiculous it would look if you're looking at gold like 4,000. It's going to be retarded. You know,
That's kind of my point.
It's going to, like, and the same thing you could say for Bitcoin, but like when these numbers start to go up, like if theoretically, let's say 10,000, that's a 5-digit number. That's a 5x away. I mean, it would just be, the green sticks would be huge here. These are 6 month right. candles. And I think it's pretty obvious what's going on here. By the end of this candle, we're going to be fucking past 2000. That's 77 more days. We got it.
Easy. Oh shit, 77 more days. Yeah. No, that would be, that's what it, we're at this interesting moment where it almost feels like everything's paused, right? And people are going to start making moves within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's happening. People are like, okay. It's like musical chairs. It stopped, but everyone's like waiting for the chairs to actually show up. And okay, where are we going to sit?
No, it's true. It's totally musical chairs. I mean, if you're, I've been watching, you know, George Gammon videos every night. He's been doing some great interviews with macro thinkers. Lawrence Leopard's tweeting, Raul Paul, Dan Tapiero. Everyone's talking about the dollar shortage. The demand for dollars is still going to increase, right? All the stimulus. You have the halving coming up. You have gold, looks like it's ready to rocket, and it is just the perfect storm. And I feel like we're at this weird calming spot right here, right now in April 13th. It's like everything's just ready to wind up and go. And I just have no clue where anything's going to go. Cause on one hand, I felt like super bearish on stocks. It's like, oh man, here's like the, you know, Jesse Colombo is talking about the bull trap. And you almost just don't know what's going to happen. I guess we're going to talk about it next week and say, you know, oh, we were right or wrong or whatever, but it just seems so volatile, but so calm right in this moment.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing with Colombo that frustrates me. It's like, dude, you know what stocks do? They're volatile. They go up and down. So no matter how fast they go down, they're going to go up. So he's going to be like pissed no matter how high we go. And I get he's right about a lot of this shit being just complete dog. When I say shit, I mean a lot of these stocks being complete dog shit, because he's right about that. But like he's got to stop, like people like who get bearish and get frustrated the market goes up. It's like that's just a reality of how all markets work. They don't go down in a straight line. They don't go up in a straight line. So like And like, this could get retarded. I don't know. When I say retarded, I mean like we go mega pump here, and the rest of retail money comes in for the just the blow off top to end all blow off tops, like S&P 4000. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but it is possible. The power of Robinhood.
Oh my God, I'm dead. The power of Robinhood.
free trades.
Nah, it's scary. Do you think the last couple of weeks have got rid of all the weak hands, both maybe in the Bitcoin space or even in for just any asset class? Do you think that liquidation that we saw a couple of weeks ago is all the cash is kind of on the sidelines and ready to go in one direction or another?
You know, that's a good question. You know, obviously people now want cash more than ever because it's the most liquid thing. If you want to go to Bitcoin, if you want to go to gold, if you want to go to stocks, if you want to go to bonds, if you want to go to real estate, it's the thing that allows you to move around the easiest right now is the US dollar. So there's obviously very high demand for that. That's a good question. I mean, you know how there's people that are always traditional equities and they won't fucking touch gold, they won't touch Bitcoin. So you're going to have that crowd if equities start to go again. They're all like the CNBC people, just scaling in, right. You know, keep buying on the way up. I mean, it's possible. Anything's possible at this point. I'm not going to say something will happen. Well, but
I think that's a good way to wrap this one up. A lot of good topics. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next week. Really happy that Chamath kind of just owned Scott on CNBC. That was just a great lesson for everybody to watch. Go watch that out. We're going to put a link in the show notes. So definitely check that out. And, you know, keep your eyes out. If you're noticing any of your friends or people in your circles who are getting interested in Bitcoin or even gold, or they even make mention of it, shoot us a DM. Let us know. We love that kind of like insights from your typical, the mind of the retail investor. I'm very curious to see which direction. Investor. Yeah, I'm very curious to hear.
We'll pay top dollar for the retail mind.
Yeah, we really will. That's like it's the best barometer. The crypto humor, beef and Bitcoin followers are a good barometer for what's going on there. But make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube. Check out these videos and leave us comments. They're definitely helpful. Make sure to follow us on Spotify and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That's also very helpful. But stay safe out there and peace.
Peace.